stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Showing a little love.
You show them.
Coming up.
Well, oh, there are new ribs.
Hey, everyone. Welcome. What you just heard was an excerpt from the popular Japanese game show Takashi's Castle, which originally ran from 1986 to 1990. It is considered the granddaddy of Japanese game shows. Bah, bah, bah. And what this is all about, I'm Harmon Leon, and this is another episode of
Comedy History 101.
Where we dive into the history of comedy. Bah, bah, bah. And with me, as always, is...
Not a robot voice. Oh no! I was doing like a Japanese robot.
Oh, like Ultraman.
Yeah, like and Johnny Sacco and his big robot.
Is that a thing, Johnny Sacco and his big robot?
Like, there was a guy. There was a guy with his robot.
We cut that out.
Yeah, cut that out. There was a guy with his robot, like a little kid with his robot. I don't think it was a game show, but it was Johnny Sacco or something. But so that's what I was trying to do.
But Takashi's Castle is very much a game show, and it's considered the granddaddy of all Japanese game shows. When we think of, like, outrageous Japanese game show, what comes to mind is, like, Takashi's Castle. But that was, like, a whole trend that actually started. So Takashi's Castle originally ran from 1986 to 1990, and that's where we get the idea of the crazy, over-the-top, oh-my-God, they're kind of falling into water a lot type game shows in Japan. And prior to that, it was just kind of like basic, a lot of quiz shows. I think the earliest Japanese game show was a game show called Gesture, which was simply charades.
Okay, well, that would be, that's very polite.
Gesture, yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to cause too much trouble with just gesture.
Yeah. But then came along Takashi's Castle, and that was the game changer. Do you want to explain, like, sort of the premise of Takashi's Castle?
Well,
like,
the actual Japanese title is called Attack Takashi's Castle.
Whoa.
So, yeah, because the premise
is... premise of this whole podcast, we learn shit.
Yeah, I know. Before we get into the premise of the show, though, Harmon, I would like to do a little bit of history that kind of ties this into your comedy history about Mr. Takashi. Because I don't know if you knew.
Oh, you mean Beat Takashi?
Right, but do you know why he's called Beat?
Oh, I kind of do. I did a while ago because I used to be, like, I've seen a few of his movies. Like, the one American movie he did was called Brother, which is like he's always what's the name for Japanese sort of gangsters?
Yakuza.
Yeah, so he always plays like a Yakuza bad guy, and he's always like just kind of like you wouldn't consider him. That's what I found out. He's like the host of this game show.
Right, because...
He's the Takashi of Takashi's Castle.
Yeah. Before all that, he actually started out as a stand-up. And he had a comedy duo with his friend Nero Kaneko. And they their stage name was Beat Takeshi and Beat Kayoshi, who's his partner. So that's where that beat comes from.
What's the stop?
Oh, kind of like the Doobie Brothers, how they're not really all brothers.
Right, exactly.
They're kind of like, the comedy premise of that was they're not really beats.
Right, yeah, and so this is actually an ancient form of Japanese comedy known as manzai that dates back...
Oh, how does that go?
Well, so what it is, it's two characters who are on stage one being a straight man, and the other
Where can we learn more about that?
You could turn into one of our most recent episodes of the straight man, so you could learn a little bit more about that. Yeah, so it was interesting because the way that whole kind of comedy started out is that it started out as kind of plays. They would put on these manzai plays, and in the play you would have two people coming. They would be delivering messages from the gods. And you would have, it would always be two people, two guys, you know, and that evolved into the straight man and the crazy guy, which is where, you know, then Takashi picked it up. That's when they
started. Wow. So we think of, like, straight man, funny guy as a Western concept, but then it goes all the way back to Japanese traditional theater, much like your buto.
Yeah.
And no, if I want to even go further, N-O-H.
Okay.
No theater.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
Poor form of Japanese.
I thought you were telling me not to go any further because there's a little bit more.
Yeah, no, don't go there.
His partner, however, those guys broke up. But what happened is his partner started kind of getting really. I think on the episode we were talking about crossing the line. His partner started crossing the line a lot.
And by the way, if you want to hear an episode on comedians that cross the line, anywhere can people go?
That would be Comedy History 101 on.
That'd be us on iTunes. Once again,
well, I wish we could say it. We couldn't really see.
Leave a comment.
You can't really say a URL over, you know, not like you go to iTunes / podcast 1278, you know.
Do they have to go to HTTPS?
www.web/. Web. Yeah, so
how did he cross the line?
Back to this. So Takashi played the funny man called the Boki in Japanese, and his friend played the straight man, which was the Tushkomi.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so what happened is that but here's the weird thing. So apparently the guy who was doing the straight man got into trouble because he did start doing a lot of material about basically making fun of, like, handicapped people and elderly and children and women. And they banned him from TV, and that's what kind of how the partnership dissolved there.
Were you able to find any YouTube videos?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple. They're all in Japanese, though.
Could you tell they're funny? Like, you know, you can tell, like, if you watch, you know, comedy of other countries, you know, if they're funny.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting.
Like, funny presence.
They're really, so the apparently the trademark of this kind of comedy is that they talk really, really fast. So even faster than normal Japanese. And also, it comes from one of the regions. Apparently it originates in a certain region in the country, so when you do this type of comedy, you're supposed to put on that accent.
Ah, so they're kind of like being the Larry the Cable Guys of Japan.
Kind of, yeah, I guess you could say
that. If I have to make an interesting correlation.
I guess you could say that. And before we go a little bit into the crazy game shows, there's one more little trivia bit that I dug
up. No, go on, dude. Okay. I didn't know this whole part.
Okay, well, actually,
this is another episode in itself. I'm taking your catchphrase.
Okay, we'll have a mini episode or something. But this is actually tied into the game show, Takashi's Castle, and that what they did was when it came out, so it was 86, they launched a video game tie-in with it, right?
Yeah.
It was called the Family Entertainment System, which basically became Nintendo. And it was supposed to be, it's been voted one of the worst video games of all time.
Even worse than the E.T. video game, which is like totally ill-confined and garbage dumps.
Yeah, no, this one was like, there's clips of it on YouTube, and like basically you go in, the game starts out, and you go in, you get fired by your boss, and then you can punch him.
So wired like that?
It's kind of like an early proto Grand Theft Auto. Because you were supposed to... Takeshi, he wanted you to be able to punch everybody in the game. And the people who made the game were like, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. So...
yeah, you're encouraged. That's not to be encouraged.
Yeah, so that's
not to say, not to say another podcast in itself, but I think there's a podcast of serious actors who started as comedians.
That's definitely one. Make sure you make a note.
Eric Bana started as a stand-up.
Yeah, the weather guy.
Eric Bana from, he was in Chopper.
Right.
That was like his big breakout movie.
Yeah, but he did, or is that him doing the weather guy? You've seen that one where he's doing Chopper? Somebody's doing Chopper as the weather guy? Is that him?
No, that's this guy who's in all the Australian comedy festivals.
Okay.
That's the guy who's like tours around Australia and has an act being Chopper.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So No, Eric Bana was in, what's the one, like Munich, that movie?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and
that's not very
the movie
funny.
About Chopper.
Yeah.
But he was a comedian. But we'll put that on the back burner.
Right.
Yeah, Beat Takashi was like I think he's like kind of like one of those guys like Christopher Walkins. Like when you like Christopher Walkins, all you know, originally known as the like screen baddie,
right.
But then when you find out that he's like prolific at tap dancing.
Yeah,
you
know? No. Then
and not to say nothing's wrong with tap dancing, but it's just kind of started like, you know, like Beat Takashi like started in comedy.
Right,
and
yeah, no.
I mean, I'm saying they're versatile. Versatile is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. He was also in, I didn't realize he was a bad guy in the David Bowie movie, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, wow. He was like head of the Japanese POW camp.
Yeah, he's a good actor. Like
yeah.
the movie it was about like LA Japanese gangs or I think drug gangs, the brother it was called.
Okay. Well, we'll check it out.
Came out sometime in the 2000s.
All right. Well he's won a few movie awards too, so he's, you know,
he's a good actor. But let's backtrack when he had his own castle.
Let's keep talking about the castle. So, what are you, I think of the clips that we've saw, we're going to have to just kind of visually describe them here because unfortunately our listeners won't be able to see them. But on the Takashi's castle, I mean, the premise is pretty simple. I mean, everybody's familiar with it and you've probably seen clips of it because, like you were saying, they redubbed it.
Yeah. So, just before we backtrack a bit, it was like the first huge Japanese TV show that like kind of broke out worldwide. It got like syndicated to like 30 different countries and then they redid it like in the UK and also in the United States, where they essentially just bought the TV show and just had like, you know, English speaking announcers, you know, kind of you know, butcher like some of the words and do like funny, you know, I'm putting funny in quotes, funny
right.
commentary.
Right, yeah.
You know? So but it's like it's an easy premise because it's this I think what I gather from Takashi's Castle is it starts with a mass amount of people, like 100 contestants or so, and then it gets whittled down to like the final like five or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the premise is like they have to storm the castle
right, yeah,
by going through these series of crazy sort of contests that sort of very much degrade them.
Yeah, that's a theme. Like, that's a theme we're going to get into here. Yeah,
and much like on there's like this Canadian TV show, like you can't say that on television or something, where all the contestants always end up getting slimed.
That was a kid show.
Yeah. A kid show indeed. It's where a young Alanis Morissette
that's
started.
Right. You know more about You Can't Do That on television than I thought.
I know. I should be on Canadian Jeopardy.
Who's the host? Wait a minute. Who's the host of Canadian Jeopardy? Would that be the U.S. version of Alex Trebek?
Yeah, it wouldn't be Alex Trebek.
No,
because
it would be like the opposite.
It would be Tom Brokaw.
Yeah.
What? But Tom Brokaw's also Canadian.
Oh, is he? I didn't
know. Well, he might. He might or might not be.
Okay.
I'm thinking Peter Jennings was definitely Canadian.
Okay.
He's passed away. I'm not sure about Brokaw.
All right, we'll have the interns look that up for us.
But I think we've digressed off of Takashi's Castle.
Right.
So essentially, when you tune into an episode of Takashi's Castle, what you're going to get a bunch of people dressed as bowling pins, like, and a bowling ball is going to come at them. You're going to get a bunch of people jumping over rocks, but some of the rocks aren't real rocks, and they fall into water. You're going to get a bunch of people dressed like giant hands, and they have to fall on giant playing cards that correlate with their hands. You're going to get people smashing into walls. You're going to people in kind of giant teacups rolling down a hill and falling over, then falling in water again. What else are you going to get?
Well, I have to say, I had to repeat when you mention the giant hand thing, you don't think it's that funny, but when you actually see it, it is pretty funny.
Yeah.
So it's like they're basically it's like the Hamburger Helper commercial, but like with a person inside.
Yeah, a bunch of giant hamburger helpers. So that's what you're going to get in Takashi's Castle. Like, it's. I think the premise was, and you can steer it into Japanese culture, it was almost like these contestants were forced into taking part in the game.
Right, yeah. Yeah, which is interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just laughing.
Oh, no, I was just saying, because that kind of ties in, because he was in another movie called, I haven't seen it, but Battle Royale, which is about the kids. You heard about this one? It was a Japanese movie.
It's a Japanese movie?
Yeah, and it's a bunch of kids who are, it's basically like Hunger Games, but like a bunch of kids like have to fight each other and win and kill each other. You know, it's like really bloody. It's like the future and everything. And apparently he makes an appearance in this movie.
Nice.
Yeah, so the Battle Royale. So that was kind of a big, it did pretty well, I think.
So a key characteristic of Takashi's Castle, which ties into that whole wave of, you know, the way over the top Japanese game shows, it just seemed like people were torturing themselves by like innocent people hell bent on being tortured on these game shows.
Yeah, I mean, and then a couple of them, like, I've seen a couple clips where it's almost you're watching a real-life Mario Brothers game, because they'll have, you know, it's a person running down an obstacle course, but the camera will track along with them, so it's like you're, you know, and weird monsters will come up and everything, they have to jump over things, so it's like watching a real-life video game.
Yeah, there's one where the contestant had to go through a maze, and there was guys sort of dressed as ancient Japanese mythical sort of characters, and if they chose the wrong door of the maze, the characters would grab them, and do you know how that would sort of conclude?
Well, eat them.
They would fall into
water.
Water and mud.
Okay, yeah.
All the other sort of things
there. Yeah, that's a lot of
falling into water and mud. So once again, this game show, it ran up until, I believe, like, you know, like late to 1990, and then it got syndicated all over the world, and then it kind of got picked up. It was a big hit in the UK, and they redubbed the announcer's voice, and the show ran from 2003 to 2007 on Spike TV. I believe the name was called MXC. I don't even know what that stands for.
Yeah,
and so then they redubbed, you know, the original Japanese, but obviously they redubbed it in a funny sort of way.
And here's Terry Perdue. She's a clown shoe resoler.
You know what they say about clowns with big feet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh! But no, that's like an easy. It was sort of like how they redubbed it. They sort of did like a Mystery Science Theater sort of approach with the redubbing of, you know, it's like when you see some of the stuff and the contestants, you know, culturally you don't kind of understand what's going on.
No.
So, you know, they just redubbed it in a funny, you know, kind of like a Mystery Science Theater type, you know, critiquing what was going on. And then it spawned, like, imitators all over the world, including a game show on ABC called Wipeout.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Wipeout?
No, I don't watch a lot of ABC game shows, believe it or not.
Yeah, so anyways, another origin of Japanese game shows were that it was sort of like on variety shows. It was like the game segment on variety shows, where they would have the celebrities engage sort of in the contest, and then from there it would spawn into its own sort of game show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You buy that?
I'm buying it, dude.
So, once again, that was like when you consider, you know, the crazy Japanese game show where once again, let's restate, it looks like just innocent people forced into this where they're sort of being tortured or held hostage to run through these series of ridiculous sort of schemes where they're falling down a lot, sort of like looks like they're getting hurt a lot.
Yeah.
like jumping across the skipping stones, and some of them look like they were actually in pain.
Well, I mean, we'll get to that. Yeah, that's, we're going to talk about that in a little bit, aren't we? Because there's a couple of these.
Yeah, what do you think? Just long legal disclaimer they had a sign appear on there? Or,
I don't know.
Or do you think they're hamming it up?
I don't know. Well, there's a couple where the pain looks pretty obvious, pretty real. A couple of the other shows that we'll be talking about as well.
Yeah, so that, from there, that's so again, that's what spawned, you know, when we started thinking of, you know, the over-the-top Japanese game show. And the next one, again, there's another type of Japanese game show where you think of just, you know, weird, bizarre, you know, Japanese culture, which, you know, I guess it kind of spawned from it. It was, okay, I'm just going to butcher the name of it. It was a comedy duo that called themselves Downtown. And it was a show called Downtown no Gaki no Tuzaki ya Yama. Can you help me on that?
No, you know what you can do is you can plug that into Google Translate and have it pronounce it and record that. How about if you do that?
It was a comedy duo, so if you type in in YouTube, like crazy Japanese game show, this would be like one of the first entries that comes up on YouTube. So they were a comedy duo. They went by the name Downtown, but probably, you know, that's the English translation of it. And they would just have these weird, like, segments that were just contestants would simply be punished for getting the wrong answer. And, yeah, any interjection in
there? No, I was just going to say, in this game show, this was one of the ones I was mentioning where the punishment for a wrong answer was particularly painful.
Yeah, so they had to go through these physical games. So again, I think we're the segment of the podcast where we talk about our favorite Japanese game show moments.
Okay.
And on this one, like one of my favorite, I don't know if you call it like favorite. It's just like fucking weird. So they had like maybe like five contestants, and each of them had to do like a really difficult tongue twister, and they're standing up. And if they got the tongue twister wrong, the host would activate this machine they call the penis machine. And if they got the tongue twister wrong, they would be socked right in the testicles.
Okay, yeah, which does look a little painful.
Yeah, so that's another like moniker of like your crazy Japanese game show. You get an answer wrong, you get like booted right in the nuts.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That was a good one. That was a good one. So again, downtown no gaki no kohushi ya arindi.
Yeah. How about you? What are some of your
favorite? Well, I will tell you. So this is one that I found also on YouTube, and apparently it's called the game show is called. Okay, I hope you're sitting down for this one. The game show is called What's in the Box? Which
Whoa!
Is pretty
What's
much
in the box?
Exactly like it sounds. So there's a box that's facing the audience that the contestants walk up behind the box and put their hands into it. And basically, as the title says, they're trying to figure out what's in the box. So it's always well, on the team that on the couple clips I watched, so it's usually always seems to be a team of Japanese schoolgirls, right? So they're all, if you can imagine that. And the team stands in front of the box so they can all see what's in the box too, as well as the audience. And then the contestant, you know, she's putting her hands in the box, you know, one on each side, and then she's trying to reach around inside to see what it was. But in this, they did the kind of normal things is, this one, they start out with a toad, and then they had an octopus, and then they went to worms. But then the best one was the very last one they had was they'd taken a little wind up, fuzzy, puppy dog, like one of those toys, you know, that jumps around.
Oh, right. Okay, so it wasn't an actual real fuzzy.
No. It was like a wind-up puppy dog. They put that in the box, and then, yeah. And the girl is freaking out so bad because she doesn't want to touch it. And every time she does touch it, she just starts screaming because she's not quite sure what it is. You know, because she's seen all these other horrible things go into the box.
Yeah.
So it was pretty good. I mean, it was pretty simple concept. What's in the box? Very entertaining.
So you can see what they're touching.
Yeah, you can see what's in the box.
So the audience would see.
Audience can see.
Oh, so that's part of it. So yeah. There's no reveal. You're just seeing it firsthand, and you're seeing the reaction. So
yeah,
they're thinking, oh, that's not so bad, and then it's like. It's a handful of worms.
Yeah, that's...
It's like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. Yeah. It's a fuzzy puppy.
Yeah, puppy.
Well, that's kind of funny.
And then it makes it funny, because like this, by that time, because it's like each girl from the group goes up, right? And so mm-hmm. like, by the time the last girl goes up, she's already seen all these horrible things that have been in the box. So even when she touches the puppy and she knows that she can feel the fur or whatever, she's still freaking out because she just doesn't.
They're fucking with people's minds.
Yep, exactly. So it's a highly recommended for me, What's in the Box.
Oh, wow. So it's sort of like Fear Factor as a game show. Well, Fear Factor is a game show.
Yeah, I've never.
But it's like unknown Fear Factor.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because I don't think I ever watched the Fear Factor one time.
And how do they win?
That's it. You have to guess what it is. And so the one...
Oh, so you do guess what it is.
Yeah, you have to guess what's in the box. And the one woman that... She gets the toads. That was the one that was right. That was pretty... Actually, it was probably a frog. Nah, it could have been a toad. It was a big one. It was one of those big toads.
Was it a wind-up toad?
No,
or is it a real toad?
So they had a real toad, and it was a real...
Oh, why did they put a real puppy in there?
It was a real... I don't know, maybe because it was just like... Because the box is open, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe the puppy just would have ran out or something.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. How many seasons does this run? Do they run out of shit?
I don't know. Yeah, I found a clip. There was a couple clips of it online, and it looked like a legitimate show, not something that somebody made up in their garage. It was a real game show with an audience and everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which brings us to my next favorite, and it's almost like what it sounds. It's called Candy or No Candy.
Yes.
So basically, contestants have to bite into something and determine if that something is candy or not candy. So the clip I saw, they would put like a shoe in their mouth and they have to take a bite to determine if it's like a candy shoe or real candy. Because there's a Japanese art called, and again I'm going to butcher this word, sakakuru, where confectioners create candy looks exactly like everyday household items. So on Candy or No Candy, the one clip I loved was... They had a bite into a coffee table.
Yeah, that was, I saw that one. Yeah, that was.
And you think, oh, what are they doing? But it turned out to be a chocolate coffee table.
Yeah, there was.
Or, and it looks exactly like a coffee
table. Yeah, it looks really good. And the one was the one I saw there was the one where the guy bit the doorknob. And you can, there's that 1 or 2 seconds when you can see where they're like going. You know, where they realize it is candy.
They got the sense of joy on their face.
Yeah.
But in other occasions, it could bite into a doorknob or a table, and it could actually be wood or glass.
Yeah, that was, and then it's not candy.
And again, you know, I don't know how much legs that series has, but I mean, the 5-minute clip I watched on YouTube was really entertaining.
Yeah, no, it was actually pretty good. Yeah,
yeah. So and again, it was like one guy had a menu and he bit into it, and it was actually just a paper menu.
Yeah, the guy was trying to eat a clothes hanger, and then he realized, and then they sit there with it in their mouth, and they're just kind of looking at the announcer, and so they're going, that's not candy.
Yeah, but they had one where a guy bit into a boot, it was a boot, and then they had another contestant bite into a shoe, and it was a candy shoe.
Oh, okay. Candy shoe.
Candy or no candy, which brings us to your next favorite.
My next one is, it's kind of a takeoff on the Jackass TV show over in the States called Silent Library. And this also started out as a segment on Downtown Nogaki no Tsukuya ya Harande. But it soon
you didn't butcher that at all.
We're gonna put that into the Google Translate. Like our other game shows on here, it was so popular that they spun it off into its own TV show. And it's basically it's like Jackass, but it's in a library. And the thing is, if you do a stunt in the library, what do you have to be? So it's basically guys like kind of hipster looking jackass guys in a library doing tricks, and they have that little that was interesting. They have a little reveal. They have that easel sitting on the table where they have to reveal what their next stunt was going to be. The entertaining clip that we were sharing was tongue fishing. Is it tongue fishing?
Yeah.
Yeah, so where they had to get somebody's tongue and basically try to pull them across the table.
Yeah, with a fishing pole.
Yeah. But what was
it? It looked painful.
Yeah, I know. That was like, but do you
Yeah. So the funny part about that clip is they're in an actual library, and surrounding the main players are actually students studying.
Yeah.
So silly. Yeah, so I think MTV actually picked it up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so we can.
Yeah, I don't know, from what I read, it might be called Dewey Decimal System, or maybe not. I think they just picked up and called it Silent Library. I don't know. Do we have to research everything here on Comedy History 101?
No, that's for the
kids.
That's
what Google's for. That's our other podcast. That's what Google's for. But yeah. So anyways, it was really funny because it looked really painful because his tongue was being reeled in via a fishing pole, but he couldn't make a noise.
Because
that's the premise. He's in a library.
Yeah, I mean that. I think that's the. I've kind of noticed that we're going to see that in a couple of those. So apparently, that's what's this called, the game show Downtown. The origin of a lot of these shows that some of our favorites here.
Oh, from the comedy team Downtown's.
Yes. This is called the comedy team Downtown show. How about that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Which brings us to my next favorite is simply called Orgasm Wars. So the premise of this is a straight porn actor has to try not to bring himself to orgasm while a gay man named Takura tries to bring him to orgasm.
And how exactly is that done?
There is a box over his private parts.
Okay.
And what we see in the clip is the guy Takuya. I guess he's just giving him a blowjob.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I noticed. So apparently, there's like a whole subgenre of the naughty Japanese game shows.
Yeah, they were on late at night. Okay. So there was like a series of them.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
But I think you would think, oh, is this a lot of shows like this? No, they actually got a lot of complaints from various organizations.
Okay, well, fair enough. All right, so yeah. it didn't last.
But the clip was pretty funny.
Yeah, it didn't last too long.
Yeah, so, you know, there's like when you see, because he's, I guess, simple comedy premise. The gay Japanese man is also very overweight.
Okay, oh boy, all right.
So, and then comedy mayhem ensues.
Okay, I get it. Fair
so
enough.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like professional wrestling in a way, but with a blowjob.
Okay, all right. Well, fair play to them.
Great individual concepts. Again, I don't know how much legs this series would have.
Yeah, I think that's kind of... These things aren't built to last. Not like Takashi's Castle.
Oh, yeah. Which ran from 1986 to 1990 and all over the world syndicated.
Yeah. And then if I could just bring up one more show here, Harmon. And this is another one that we talked about. This also originated on the Downtown Comedy Show. And this was competition was called Marshmallow Rubber Band.
先攻は元転送チーム。順番は最初が蛍原、次は星ちゃん、藤本、宮迫と鈴木、アンカーは原西に決定。
Now,
is it self-explanatory?
Not really.
What
kind of, but not really. So basically what happens is contestants, there's a pole attached to a wall. Contestants are rubber banded to the pole with rubber bands around their face, usually like one around the chin, one around the forehead, one under the nose. And then, hold on, we're almost there. And then marshmallows are dangled in front of them, tantalizingly out of reach, so that they have to walk forward with the rubber band distorting their face as they try to eat the marshmallow. So it turns into a kind of crazy contortion game.
Oh, right, okay. Can they reach them? I'm thinking they have rubber bands on their face. Do they snap back if they can't reach it?
Yeah, so it's like big kind of rubber bands, not like your normal rubber bands. And it's just they can walk away from the pole for a certain amount. And then, you know, if they miss the marshmallow, it pulls them back. But I guess it's taking a certain amount of strength, you know, to reach the marshmallows. So, but
probably
guess,
practice.
Yeah, I get the funny part. This was kind of not one for the podcast universe, but the funny part is the way the people's faces get distorted as they are walking towards the marshmallow with the rubber bands over their face.
And so this came out in 1989.
Yeah.
This game show.
Yeah.
This is part
of the Downtown Comedy Hour.
Ah, I see. Yeah. And what was your reaction from watching the video?
I was crying. I was laughing. So it's just it doesn't sound like I said it doesn't sound funny. You just have to watch because it's just if you've ever seen anybody take a rubber band and put it on their face, it's kind of funny. If you think that's funny, you're gonna go nuts over the show.
Yeah. There's that trick and taking just regular like scotch tape and like taping your face.
Like the tape
is always like a. Yeah. or League of Gentlemen. That's how they like contorted their face, in the local shop.
Right,
like when they were a sketch group, they would just do it with tape.
Yeah, okay, that'd be awesome.
But and which brings us to my last favorite is a show called Tore?
Okay, yeah, that one. Tore. Let's go with that.
Yeah. So this is just weird. So contestants have to solve puzzles or answer riddles while slowly being mummified.
Yeah.
So on the clip I saw, it was just this woman. She's answering questions, and this machine slowly just wraps her in gauze. And I guess she has to answer all the questions or riddles before she's completely mummified.
Yeah, and it's like...
Kind of part gay joke, kind of part weird Japanese fetish,
I think. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, like, industrial box wrappers that they're using. It's dispensing all the gauze, you know. I didn't know how this was going to work when you were talking about it, but yeah, so it just start and then they ask the questions, it'll wrap her. I think it automatically just starts at her feet, right? It wraps up down there, yeah. And then the kind of cool thing I thought was the CGI mummy who would ask questions there, wearing sunglasses.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, again, like, how would you, if you lived in America, like, pitch that to a network?
I know. It's like, that's not going to fly.
Yeah. So, again, I think just a lot of these come out of, like, Japanese culture of, you know, kind of like making yourself look as ridiculous as possible, which mm-hmm. is sort of out of the norm of Japanese society.
Right,
you know, again,
yeah.
I've been to Tokyo and you just see, like, at night, like, your Japanese businessman, pretty straight-laced, straightforward. But then when you go out and you look around, like, the karaoke bars at night, they're completely shit-faced.
All
and
right.
they just don't give a shit, you know, because they're out with the group and they just, like, let loose. And, and that's sort of out of the norm of, like, your 9-to-5 sort of society.
Okay. All right. I can see how that fits in.
Yeah. So anyways, what it said here was, like, so the game show cliche, it once ruled the airways, and then they got into some trouble, not a lot of trouble, but some of the Japanese people were outraged by them, like human rights groups, broadcasting human rights groups that complained, you know, this, like, sort of, you know, tortured ish game shows. And so again, so a lot of groups protested on these, like, sort of punishment games or these sexy late night game shows, and then they protested, like, to tone it down. And then came, you know, such boring shows like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which ushered in a new age of Japanese game shows that remains today. So it's kind of like, now, instead of, like, average citizens being tortured, the game shows are largely, you know, celebrities.
His home was
as contestants.
Right, yeah. Just kind of like back to that, like you were saying, that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was pretty big for a while. Yeah, it's just kind of, so this is basically, when would you say would have been the heyday for these type of shows?
Well, it seems like, well, Takashi's Castle is 1984, and I believe, you know, through the 90s probably. Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of died off with the Regis Philbin.
Yeah, so it said here by the year 2000, the punishment game and the sexy late night programming had drastically toned down.
Big. Oh, man, okay.
So 1984 to about 2000,
yeah.
That was your kind of golden age of wacky, over-the-top Japanese game shows.
That would have been the time to have been there, man.
That would have been the era.
Okay.
So I think we kind of wrapped it up. We've gone to the granddaddy of, you know, Japanese game shows, which is Takashi's Castle, and, you know, brought it through the wacky era and some of the wacky highlights of the history of Japanese comedy game shows.
Actually, yeah, we did, and we actually did manage to squeeze some comedy history in there as well, so we weren't, you know, this isn't just a listicle.
Yeah, so anyways, if you like Comedy History 101, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, like us, leave a comment. If you leave a funny comment, we'll read it.
That's
so simple.
Yeah, that's
just leave a funny comment, and we will read your funny comment.
You could make comedy history yourself.
We need some more comments. We have, like, two, and I wrote one of them.
Okay.
I mean,
no, you don't say
or
that
maybe
once.
I didn't. So anything else, Scott?
No, that was just it was great. It was a great little trip down memory lane. Kind of missing the late 90s now, but learned a lot about Takashi that I didn't know before. I kind of knew about him a little bit, but, you know, the history of Japanese comedy. So I think all around... I think we can pat ourselves on the back for this one.
Yep, and thanks for tuning in. Bye bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.